There you go. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our Das Torah Chavrusa, Adas Tefillah Chavrusa. We got the name of the sefer wrong on the first line, so I guess we're doing well. Our Das Tefillah. Let me tell you a little bit about what I hope to be able to do together, what I can do, and be very upfront about what I can't do. Sefer Das Tefillah. Sefer Das Tefillah is a... It's a very difficult tefillah sefer by Ehud Avitzedek or Ehud Rakovsky. Depends which day you catch him. Some of his farm he writes Ehud Avitzedek, sometimes Ehud Rakovsky. Obviously, the older family name was Rakovsky, and they are, however, I believe, fifth generation Yerushalmis, and they changed the name to Avitzedek at some point. But he kind of goes by both. He's got a hyphenated name. Not too many hyphenated names in Bayit Vegan, but he's got a hyphenated name. I had the schuss to come across this sefer many, many, many years ago. I learned it for the first time with actually Rabbi Simcha Weinberg, who was at the time the rabbi of Lincoln Square Synagogue, and now lives in Riverdale. Learning through this sefer has really been the primary thing that's inspired me to study tefillah further in depth. This one sefer. This sefer, I am getting one chat comment that the audio is sketchy. Is that for a lot of people? Okay, should I try to put, I'll do my best to talk loudly for now. Maybe next week I'll wear a headset to try to get it as clear as we can get. So this sefer was the first machshava sefer that Rabbi Rakovsky came out with. Rabbi Rakovsky was a Talmud for many years in Chevron Yeshiva, and for many years a Talmud of Rav Moshe Shapiro, who was considered to be really Gadol Hador in machshava. And he put this out to try to give a little bit of an overview of tefillah. I've had the chutzpah to speak with him many times. His apartment is on Rachel Frank. Those of you who know Bayit Vegan know he's just a couple of levels up from Gross. And the opportunity to go and ask him questions on his sefer, he is incredibly giving of his time. The problem is when I go to him and I ask him a question, he starts and then he talks for an hour and then he asks me if I have another question. He is an encyclopedia of machshava. He is an absolute encyclopedia of machshava and a tremendous resource. This sefer, Das Tefillah, is his easy sefer. That's his easy sefer. He next wrote a sefer called Das Shabbos. And Das Shabbos was so difficult that he told me that his friends asked him who in the world he was writing it for. Who would be the audience to read that sefer, given what he put in it? So he considers Das Tefillah to be sort of his easier work. Okay, I see that it's not so clear. Hasn't happened until now, so I'm not really sure why tonight it's finally happening. But this is his work on Tefillah. He is a Rav he's a Rebbe in the Kollel in Shvut Ami, the Yeshiva near Meir Sharm, and he's written many, many, many Sfarim. But this Sefer in particular has really changed the way I view Tefillah. The most amazing thing that he does is what he does do. The Sefer is 500 pages long. I hope we won't be in quarantine long enough to finish the Sefer together. The Sefer is 500 pages long, and he doesn't talk about particular tefillos. He doesn't talk about particular tefillos 500 pages long. Most Sfarim that you will find on tefillah jump in to talking about what is this tefillah about, where is that pasuk from, what is this thing about. He has 500 pages on the experience of tefillah. Most of the tefillah thoughts, the tefillah ideas, the tefillah shiurim that you probably came across over the years were explanations of particular prayers. That's very nice. But it's very difficult to put those thoughts, I find, into our daily connection with Hashem. This book is completely about the underpinnings of what it means to talk to God, what it means to talk to God. So my goal, if I can get the sound right, my goal is to learn together once a week. I can't promise that I'll have enough time to make this a shiur. It's called a das tefila chavrusa. I may stumble over a word and even look it up perhaps while we're online together. But the goal is to try to learn the Sefer together. I'll bring it up on screen in just a moment. And try to glean what we can from this book. The book is incredibly difficult to understand. What makes it so beautiful, as you're about to see, is that Rav Avit Tzedek is a master at weaving in the words of the Sfarim that he's quoting and almost making it look like prose. Usually when you have a Sefer that's quoting a Sfarim, so you'll have a stop. And this is what he says, as so-and-so says. He rarely does that. He simply weaves in the words of 30 or 40 different Machshavah Sfarim and makes it look like a unified whole, as you'll see. It's such a pleasure to read, except that the concepts that he's talking about are sometimes so difficult. So let's do some learning together around 9 o'clock or a little after 9 o'clock. We'll stop those who would like to daven Ma'ariv together. It's always good to follow a tefillah learning with a chance to put it into action. And hopefully we'll enjoy. I will keep the chat box. I'll occasionally look at the chat box. Everyone, I assume, at this point knows how to use Zoom. So feel free to raise your hand either by turning on your screen or by raising your hand in the participants. Let's get to the learning. Exit full screen. Tefila one. Ugh. Even looking at the Sefer, such a machai for me. Hold on one second. Boom. Okay. Give me 1 second. It's telling me that if I get rid of a few things, things may come out better. So let's try that. That one we need. That one we don't need. Okay. Let's give this a try. We'll see how it goes. Okay. Shame. A name. What's in a name? He starts the Sefer with a look at various understandings of what the word tefillah means. Have you ever wondered what the word tefillah means? What's the root of the word tefillah? Anybody want to turn on the mic and take a shot at that? What is the root of the word tefillah or lehit palel? It's kind of a funny word.
To judge yourself in some way?
Judge yourself in some way. So that's actually where he's going to start. He's going to start with the fact that palal may mean to judge. But the reality is that doesn't seem to have anything to do with tefillah. Why would tefillah be judging yourself? There's a very interesting comment in the Sefer HaIkarim by Rav Yosef Albo. Rav Yosef Albo says that one thing that we don't want to do while we're praying is to argue and to wonder even if we're deserving of something. He says it's actually a slippery slope. Because sometimes in your tefillah, have you ever wondered if you could ask for so much? Have you ever wondered, have I kind of gone over my limit? I should have asked for a 10% raise and I asked for a 20% raise. And one of the things we do is we assume that the 10% raise we probably were worthy of, but the 20% raise, well, that's above our pay grade. So the Sefer HaIkarim, Yosef Albo, points out that that is arrogance. The reality is that we can't assume we deserve anything. We haven't deserved our lives. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us everything that we have as a gift. It's a gift. And therefore, we should not be judging ourselves during tefillah. We shouldn't be asking, am I worthy of this? Am I not worthy of this? The answer is, I have been worthy of everything I've gotten so far. Tefillah is not about whether I have earned it, so to speak, but whether I can try somehow to convince HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change nature, to give it to me anyway. And that's one of the things that he's going to speak about here. But let's start. He says, Shane, a name in Hebrew is more than just something I call myself, as somebody once said. The Arasai Satov Avahu, he says. He begins with the beginning of the Chumash. The Achomer Hazeh Shekaru Chiyuli Nikro B'lashon HaKodesh Tohu. He quotes the Ramban. The Ramban says the following, that the world was created from two substances. The entire world, the Ramban says, very similar to Big Bang Theory, was created from just a little something that expanded and became the world. The Ramban says that there were actually two substances from which the whole world was created, one for the ground and one for the heavens. And this substance, one of the substances, was called Hiuli, as the Greeks called it. It's called in Lashon HaKodesh Tohu. V'hamila nigzera milshonam betohe al harishonot. What is Tohu? Why should a thing that makes everything else be called Tohu? So in Eretz Israel, they think it's tofu, because pretty much anything in Eretz Israel, you can make out of tofu. And you think it's meat, but really it's tofu. But tohu has nothing to do with tofu. What exactly is tohu? Tohu is, I regret. The word tohu is used in the Maseches Kedushin. Tohu al Rishonos means I regret what I did before. Why would I regret coming in contact with this primordial substance? Mipnei shim ba'adam l'gzor bo shem. Because if I try to give it a name, tohev v'nimlach l'koro b'shem acher, I would keep saying, nah, that's not exactly what it is. I keep switching. I'd say, I regret giving it that name. I think it's this. Ki lo lavash tzura, she itpas ba Hashem klal. Because at that point, whatever this primordial matter was, it was without form, and therefore he couldn't give it a name. A name in Hebrew defines something, defines it. It's not simply that it's what I happen to call it. I need to differentiate it for language purposes. It defines it. I wouldn't be able to give it a name because in order to name something, you got to know what it is. V'hatsura hanilbeshes l'chomer hazeh nikre b'loshen bohu, etc. That's the Ramban says. Look at the next piece he quotes. See again. Look what he does here. He goes right from one quote to another quote. That's what makes the Sefer so beautiful. He's going from piece to piece. Now he's quoting the Maharal. Shem moreh al hamahus. A name defines the essence of something. Why do you think it's such a big deal to think about what name that we should give our children? Why do Jews make such a big deal out of the name that they choose? Why is it that we believe that there's some sort of special Ruach HaKodesh that parents get in order to name their kid? Why do you need Ruach HaKodesh to name your kid? Whatever name you pick, that's a nice name. Because Shem Moreh Al HaMahus, says the Maharal, a name of something, says something about the essence of the thing. Shem Hu Geder HaDover Moreh Al Atzmo Shel Dover. It's the definition of the thing. It speaks to the essence of the thing. That's one of the explanations why a male is not named until after the Bris Milah. That's not a hard, fast rule. At times we do. But for the most part, we don't name a male child until after the Bris Milah because the child isn't yet, child's Jewish. If you don't have a Milah, you're Jewish. But the child isn't yet exactly what he's going to be. He hasn't simply been, he hasn't been completely formed. And since he hasn't been completely formed, you can't give him a name because the name describes what he is. Kol davar she'ein bo hasaga shel shem hu b'chinas tohu. Anything that lacks the definition, the understanding of what its name is, that's a tohu. Mitzius chomer below tzura. It's a thing, but I can't quite give it a form. I can't quite define what it is. Hashem mor al tzuraso. A name speaks about its form. Perush tochno apnimi, the inner form of what it is. Gidro umashmauto shel hadavar, hasuga shel shem inyana binas machus. Bina, these are his words. No parentheses here, no quotes here. Binas machus, to understand. For that reason, and we'll end with this for this part, minolan dishmagar. Very fascinating Gemara in Bracha says, how do you know that a name makes a difference? A name, the name you give something, can cause it to have a certain future. Amar Rabbi Elazar d'Amar k'ra l'chu chazu mifalos Hashem sham shamut ba'aretz. The pasuk says, look at the actions of Hashem. They made destruction, shamut, destruction in the world. Says the Gemara, al tikri shamut? No. The actions of Hashem don't cause destruction, they cause shemot, names. You got to love that when Chazal do that. Don't read it this way, read it that way. Come on, but if that's what the Pasuk says, the other way doesn't make any sense. Look at the actions of Hashem that made names in the world. Shame, motzi et hametziut, midei shimamon, tohu. He says something very deep. He says the name, a name is the opposite of Shemamon, which is what's a good word for that? Something which has been totally destroyed, wasteland. Right? Shemamon is churva, something which has been destroyed. Shame, Shemama, Shoresh Meshutaf Lahem, Min Hashoreshim Belashon HaKodesh, Asher Lahem Shtei Mashmaot Hafichiyot. This is one of those words in Hebrew. And I don't know of a sefer that goes through all of them, although it's a fascinating thing. There are certain roots in Hebrew that mean something and its opposite. Something and its opposite. Because very often, the thing and its opposite are just two ends of a spectrum. They're very, very connected. The Maharal speaks about this in the beginning of Sefer Netzach Yisrael. Sefer Netzach Yisrael writes about Geula. Have you ever thought about the fact that Ga'al and Gola? Gal to redeem and Gola to exile. Gimel Aleph Lamed, Gimel Lamed Hey. They both share the Gimel and the Lamed. One of them, says the Maharal, is the Hey. Hey represents something that's spread out to all four directions and a point in the middle. Aleph is a single point in the middle. You know the difference between Geula and Golos, between Gaal and Gala? Just whether we are collected in the middle. He writes that the Jewish people are still attached at the hip, but we're spread out all over the world. Almost the rubber band, he writes. The Maharal is trying to counter those in that parak who say that the Jewish people are done. The Christians would say, whatever, the Jewish people rejected. He said, you can't reject it. They've been taken in a rubber band and they've been stretched. Imagine a die in the number five. They've just been stretched from that point. But it'll just take a moment and it'll snap back. Or hey, the 5 points become one and it becomes an aleph. Gola and Gaal, a very similar root. And that's what he's referring to here as well, that you have a phenomenon throughout Hebrew that sometimes is something in the opposite. And that's true for name and destruction, because name is the opposite. Destruction is where it has no form, and a name is when it gets its form. Why does he do all this? Because he knows all this stuff. If I knew all these sources, I would quote them also. He probably could just start the sefer by saying, what is the root of the word tefillah? And what does the word lehitpalel mean? But since he's gotten his head all these awesome sources, so he's going to put them down. This is a half page, Rabosai. A half page is 500 pages that are coming out of his mind. It's an incredible thing. As I said, nothing in the book compares to sitting with him. It's really embarrassing. He talks a mile a minute for an hour when you ask him a simple question and you have to try to write the whole thing down. Amazing. So let's skip just a little bit. He says, by the way, Tafkid Ha'adam B'Kriyat Shemot Nivrei Ha'olam. That's what Adam Arishon was doing, naming the animals. Why was he giving the animals names? Because what it means is that Adam Arishon was explained the purpose of every single being and every single thing that was created. He wasn't just dropped into the world. He understood why we have all the different species of everything. He understood what its purpose was. He understood what role it played, and that's why he was able to give it a name. because it represented a deep, deep understanding of what this thing was that came before. But that's for another time. He has a couple of pages on this, maybe for Bracious. You can look at that again. Okay. Let's see if this will move over a little bit. Can you move over your screen so you could see this whole thing or no? Drag the little bit of the screen to the left side so we could look at this. Okay, here we go. Everybody with me? Okay, here we go. Hora'ah, let's just begin at least the Hora'ah. Let's try to do the Hora'ah Rishona. Tefillah is din u'mishpat, as somebody, maybe Sima, somebody said tefillah is din u'mishpat, but not the way we ever thought of din u'mishpat, of justice and of din. Okay. Because of a chacham David Kimchi, somebody could silence that. Okay, good. Kasav HaChacham, he's quoting here Avudraham. Who was the Avudraham? The Avudraham was a Rishon, and he said, wow, it's too bad. Kids today don't understand tefillah anymore, so I'm going to write a sefer. He's in the Middle Ages. I'm going to write a sefer so people understand something about tefillah. It was a problem then, too. So the Avudraham quotes Reb David Kimchi, Mihu Zev Ezehu, the Radak, a very early Rishon. Radak says, "Shinikreta tachanava bakasha tfila." Why is this thing called tfila? He says it's miloshon poku pelileha. Poku pelileha. In the time of Yeshayahu, the leadership of the Jewish people let it down. He points his finger directly at the leadership of the people, who were the Kohanim and the Nevi'im, very often the false Nevi'im. And he's in this chapter, he's talking about how drunk they would get. The judges would be drunk all the time. So poku pelileha, their judgment stumbled. But the key word we want is pelileha. She'inyano dinu mishpat. The hatam. Watch what he's going to say. It's not what you're going to expect. Ki hamitpalel mevakesh me'et Hashem she'ishpatenu. A person who's praying is asking God to judge him or her. Birachamav, with mercy. I never thought that, well, before I read the Sefer. Right? I'm asking God to judge me. What do I need that for? I got enough problems. I have enough averas. I need a God to judge me. So what does it mean? Yishpeten birachamav, v'lo yifneh l'rov hara'ot shoseh. But he should judge me in a merciful way that doesn't look at everything that I've done. Ki hamishpat, and somehow through judgment, he should free me of my sins and they shouldn't be remembered anymore. That's very strange. Through judgment? I always thought that what I was asking Hashem was not to look at the scoreboard. Don't pay attention to what I've done. I'm your son. I'm not hoping to get this based on Sar Va'onish. I haven't earned it. But that's not what the Avudraham says. As the pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Yisreini Hashem, ach b'mishpat. You can give me certain amount of punishment, but be measured in your mishpat. Al ba'apcha, don't give me the whole thing, pentam itaini, because that'll be too much for me. Very, very strange. I always thought I was asking God for mercy. But the Avudraham, this is about as classic a tefillah sefer as you can get here. We're talking 1300s in Spain. The Avudraham says that we actually ask God to judge us, but not too harshly. Why? Gavan shel chidush yeshno kan. Talks like an Israeli. There's an aspect of chidush here. Bashkafar rishona, at first glance. What's going on here? Af me'orer hu etzar hergeshei alev. It kind of gets us going. It gets us thinking. It bothers us. Mahus tfila he din? V'hamispalel omeid lishpat? Tfila is judgment, and I'm getting up to be judged? Harei nikreiti rachami. The Gemara wants to know whether or not women are obligated, and women were told by the rabbis to daven 2 times a day, 3 times a day. Of course they're supposed to daven. All of us need the mercy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vizu harehi segula sa. This is what tefillah works. No, because we ask God to be kind to us. Alea hishlachnu Yehavenu. This is what we've thrown our burden on. Ubasamu miftachinu. I always thought I was asking for mercy. La'orer harachamim chesed v'chanina mitzvos barach. Zehu otzem koch lamo neged midas hamishpat. V'likroa gezar hadin. I thought that the reason why I was davening was to say to God, don't look at the judgment. It turns out that's not it. And then he says as follows, Amnam. This is the definition. This is what's happening. And just like he starts with definitions, he's very, very orderly this way. He likes to point out to you, this is what it is. Listen closely. Tachlis pu'ala hu harachmi. The result of tefillah is that God has mercy on us. Ach maisa tefillah atzmo. Ha'avodah zu tefillah mishtayeches inyan hamishpat la'amod hadin. The act of tefillah is to put myself in God's court. It's to put myself in God's court, to open myself up to be judged. The result is that because we're willing to do that, as we'll see, God's going to have mercy on us. We're not going to make a big thing out of tefillah to get him to judge us every day. But sometimes there's a difference between the act itself, the act of tefillah, we're going to explain this before we end tonight, and the result, which is that we get the mercy of God. What does it mean? He explains, quoting the Rambam, that tefillah, kavanas maisa tefillah hi amida lifnei hamelech. The act of tefillah at its core is simply standing before Hashem, appearing before the king. I get called, I have to make an appearance, and I come and I stand before the king. As Rambam writes, Ketzeri ha-kavanah shifnas li v'makom machshavos, v'yira atzmo kilu omed lifnei ha-shechina. I have to view it as if I'm standing before the Shechina. U'mevar ha-grach mi-brisk, the Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said, that this kavanah, and there are many, including the Chazon Ish, said, I can't do that, I don't know what you're talking about. But he says, this kavanah, you have to have the whole time you sing Shmon Esrei. Reb Chaim deals with a stira in the Rambam. There's one place in the Rambam where the Rambam says you have to have kavanah for the first bracha of Shmon Esrei. And elsewhere the Rambam says you have to have kavanah the whole Shmon Esrei. So which one's right? So of course, Reb Chaim always answers, well, there are two different ideas here. Reb Chaim suggests that we're supposed to know what the words mean in the first bracha of Shmon Esrei. And there's nothing wrong with not knowing what all those words mean and looking them up. We have an obligation to have kavana. Kavana there means we have to know what the first bracha is. We have to think about the words as we're saying. And that's why some people say that bracha a little more slowly than the others. But says Reb Chaim, there's another kind of kavana. You know what kavana? You have to have the whole Shmon Esrei that I'm standing before the king. I'm standing before the king. I don't need to know what I'm saying. And I hate to say it, I don't have to know what I'm saying. Can I at least imagine that I'm having a meeting with the Ribbono Shel Olam? I'm in the room with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm in his palace. I'm standing in front of him. That says, if I stop feeling that, then I'm not praying. Again, very difficult. The Chazon Ish himself, in his commentary on Reb Chaim's writings, said, we can't do that today. But the idea is that the essence of prayer is not to know what the words mean, is not to think about the words, is not to ask him for anything in particular. It's to show up. It's to show up and to feel that we're standing before our master. And that is, if you think about it, a frightful moment of truth. Matzav zeh tovea yira. This has to cause us to be afraid. Or in awe, certainly. I'm standing in front of the master of the universe. From my house, I'm not even going to shul. I'm in the basement, and I'm standing immediately in front of the master of the universe. V'kach mevar ha-gra. So the gra says, Kriya shma tzarech lios ba'ava. Shma is about love. Tefillah tzricha lios b'yira. Tefillah has to be fear. There's a lot. There are many, many different halachos between Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed this out once in one of his tshuva drushes. The halachos of Shema and the halachos of Shmona Esrei are very different. They're much stricter about the way we dress, about the way we act. There's no law that says you can't walk in front of someone saying Shema. It's not nice. You should let them have that moment. But there's no law that says you can't walk within four amos of someone who's, but you're not allowed to walk within four amos of someone who is yet to try, not who's down in Shema. So you can't walk in front of them. Why? Because the Rav explains that in Shema, we are hearing from God, right? For those who are listening to the tefillah thoughts, but also to the extent we're talking to God. Where's God? He's up there somewhere, whatever. When I'm saying Shmona Esrei, I am meeting with God right here. If I walk in front of someone who's saying Shmona Esrei, I'm walking between him or her and God. That's the way we're supposed to look at it. And therefore, I can't do that. The laws are much, much stricter for what I need to wear and how I need to stay. Everything is different. Shema is enjoying and relishing and loving God, and it's not standing in front of God. Shmona Esrei, I take three steps forward, and now I'm standing in front of God. It says the Gra, that has to bring fear. Yiratzmo keilu hu omeid. What does that mean? Re'iyazu molida yira. The same word. Seeing this, feeling this, has to bring about fear. Osios re'ia, ki al yidei ha-re'ia ba'li'ira. Reb Tzadok HaKohen says that only if I can envision, if I can imagine that I'm standing in front of Hashem, can I really be afraid of him? Can I really bring out that fear? Tachlis kavona zu hi ha-kara maleya b'darkas nochach. What this means is nochach means he's in front of me. Bet lukoso yisbarach. Chechrech betchusha chayav chavayatit. Maz chavayatit? A chavaya is something I live through. Something that I'm really experiencing. And he quotes the Chazon Ish, says, it's got to be letzayer kamo chay. Eich shehakadosh baruch hu shomea siach sib sosein. The whole experience of tefillah is to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that is ultimately opening myself up and making myself vulnerable in front of him. As we'll explain more when we continue, please God, next week. At the end of the day and during my tefillah itself, I may turn to him with words of mercy. But one of the key moments of Shmona Esrei is when I first step into his presence. And I need to try, we'll talk about this actually as it turns out in some of the tefillah thoughts coming up, we need to try to imagine we're actually stepping into his office. One of the things that I do, I'm sorry if I say it here and then repeat it probably next week, is I try to imagine as I'm about to take my steps forward that I'm standing outside of the office of someone very, very important. Today is usually, you know, Dr. Goldovsky or some other doctor that I need. I've been waiting for the chance to go and see Dr. Goldovsky, Dr. Stein, you name it, whoever the doctor is that I'm going to see. And you know that feeling when you're in the waiting room and then they say, Penner, it's your turn. Right? When I stand up to daven Shmona Esrei, I try to, before I take my three steps forward, I try to imagine myself sitting in a little ante room. And then they say, Penner, it's your turn. And then I walk in to see the boss. There is a certain level of yira that has to come with that. And we'll learn how that's at the core of tefillah, that the goal of tefillah, as he writes, might be to get mercy. And some of the words that I use might be begging for mercy. But the very experience, the core of the word tefillah, what does it mean to daven? To stand up before the king, to make myself vulnerable, to realize that I have to appear before him because he is my master. And all of those things speak to coming to a certain judgment and coming to a certain relationship. He's going to take that further next week in a fascinating way. He's going to show how we're actually carrying out a court case with nature and against our fates and how we're going to do that. But we'll have to wait for that for next week. So I hope you've enjoyed our first time together. We'll be on Mirtz Hashem next week at the same time. And I'm going to grab a sitter and we'll have a mire. I'll unmute everybody if you'd like to be unmuted. You can wait, stop share. It's good to say shot together if we can for those who want to do that. Stop the recording. Second.